how do we really get diversity in the office? It's a stated goal of many corporations, and there's now an entire industry trying to foster diversity, equity, and inclusion at work. But reality is lagging far behind intentions, especially in the upper echelons of business, and real solutions can sometimes seem out of reach. Frank Dobbin and Alexandra Kalev offer up a new approach in their book, Getting to Diversity: What Works and What Doesn't. Frank is a professor of sociology at Harvard University, and Alexandra Kalev teaches sociology and anthropology at Tel Aviv University. Here they are to share five of their key insights.
Hi, I'm Frank Dobbin, here with Alexandra Kalev, my co-author on the book Getting to Diversity: What Works and What Doesn't. We're here to spell out five big insights from the book. In it, we track data from 800 companies over decades to answer a simple question: which diversity programs lead to gains in workforce diversity, which don't, and which actually backfire? The first insight is that the proof is in the numbers. Businesses set targets for everything, but when it comes to diversity, they look at everything but the numbers that really matter. They look at exit surveys after diversity training, or climate surveys, or their own ranking on best diversity company lists from Fortune or Indeed. That's not the way they measure profits, though. They use the real numbers. If diversity programs are working, it stands to reason, it should show up in the numbers as well. There should be more Black managers than there were 5 years ago. And that's what we measure, whether the workforce is changing. We look at how different diversity programs affect the numbers of women and people of color in management. So we're able to spot the programs that lead to increases in diversity. And what we find is that most popular programs make things worse. If you've been forced to sit through a cringy diversity training session yourself, you'll know what I'm talking about. Companies have been using programs that backfire without even knowing it because they don't track the numbers. So it's no wonder that the odds a Black or Hispanic worker makes it into corporate management are about the same today as they were 40 years ago. The second insight is that to promote diversity, companies need to crack the career system wide open. We're used to thinking that corporate career systems are open to everybody, that what holds some groups back is bias managers and coworkers. But we now know that corporate career systems block certain groups at every stage. Deloitte spotted problems with their own career system in the 90s. Women made up 50% of new hires, but they were shut out of mentoring, shut out of training, and shut out of the teams with the biggest accounts. 6 years after they were hired, almost no women were being promoted to partner. Deloitte opened all of these things up to women, and soon the firm topped the industry for women partners, and they still do. By opening up recruitment, mentoring, and management training systems to everybody, companies can expand diversity quickly and avoid backsliding. The new systems lock in the change. So for recruitment, companies often visit the Big Ten schools their managers graduated from, but not historically Black colleges and Hispanic-serving universities, where they'd find a lot more people of color. Cracking the recruitment system wide open means sending managers to recruit at those schools, too. For mentoring, it's usually informal, because people think mentors and protégés should find each other. But most managers choose protégés who look like them, and managers are mostly white men. So McKinsey found that in big finance firms, 75% of Black workers have no other Black person on their team, no one from their group who could mentor them. Cracking open mentoring means creating a formal system and making sure every single employee gets offered a mentor and gets matched based on interests, not on race or gender. Management training is also usually informal. A store manager uses a slow day to show a cashier how to do scheduling or payroll. Cracking training open means creating a formal management training program and inviting everybody to sign up. The data are in. Companies that crack career systems wide open in these ways see large and sustained increases in the diversity of workers, even managers.
Insight 3. Leaders must spearhead change. That may seem obvious. Leaders should be leading. But in diversity efforts, Firms often put the entire job on diversity and inclusion departments or on consultants. This leaves managers out of the picture. To change anything in a firm, managers need to see the problem, help devise solutions, and put them in place. Getting leaders to be change agents doesn't happen by training, but by doing. It can happen, for example, when managers join a recruitment visit to a historically black college. After such visits, they tell us they realize the problem right away. The firm has been neglecting an obvious talent pool. Or when they mentor the only black person on the floor and get to know them and the barriers they face. Or when they join a management training team and meet aspiring managers from different groups. By helping to recruit, mentor, and train people from other groups, leaders become part of the solution. This is why all three of these solutions work so well. Our book shows exactly how to set up each of these programs and what mistakes to avoid. But what works best is getting managers, including white men, to join a diversity task force. Task forces look first at the firm's data on hiring, retention, promotion, and layoffs by race, ethnicity, and gender, or any other group. That usually serves as a wake-up call when they see that some groups have it tough. Managers on the task force then brainstorm for solutions. This might be making sure Latinx first-line managers get mentoring or retraining workers from downsized jobs who tend to be women and people of color, or giving new parents more latitude in building their work schedules. Task force members then bring the solutions they devised back to their departments and make sure they get implemented. Managers and task forces tell us the experience really woke them up. It got them to see that there was a real problem, but also that the career barriers they discovered were not hard to fix, just a matter of using management ingenuity to open up those bottlenecks. Deloitte put a task force in every office and asked them to look at the data and figure out solutions. Sometimes every office has a different bottleneck and needs a different solution. Insight 4. Work-life supports are a secret weapon for achieving diversity. It's no secret that everybody needs work-life balance, but women and people of color need these supports most. So opening up work-life supports is a very effective all-around diversity engine. Most women still do more than their share of caregiving at home. And parents of color, women and men, often do more caregiving. They typically don't have the income to allow one parent to take a break from working full-time or to hire help at home. Without help, women and people of color may quit to take a job that gives them more work-life support. Sometimes they don't have a choice. That sets back their career progress, and the employer loses recruitment and training costs. This can be easily avoided. The problem is that most companies, even those that have formal policies, still treat work-life supports as perks for valued employees. This means that the CEO's right-hand woman gets the flexibility she needs, but not a rookie in the mailroom. This also means that many workers who need work-life supports don't ask for them. They know their bosses will not approve. Many managers are still afraid that flexibility and remote work will reduce productivity. But getting work-life supports to work for everyone is not rocket science. Look at what happened during COVID, when workers transitioned to remote work and to flexible schedules overnight. Productivity even increased in many cases. That's a proof of concept for anyone who is still on the fence. When work cannot be done at home, as in retail jobs, firms can easily offer flexible and predictable schedules. The Gap experimented with planning shift schedules 2 weeks in advance and allowing workers to swap shifts. After 9 months, supervisors reported that managing the change was a snap, and in stores that made the change, sales increased by 7% and productivity rose by 5%. In the book, we offer advice and show hard data on how to manage schedule flexibility and on how to manage family leaves when employees have a family need and what kinds of childcare supports companies can offer to boost productivity and diversity. Insight 5. Diversity programs that blame managers backfire. The most popular diversity programs blame managers for slow progress. These include diversity and harassment training, discrimination and harassment grievance procedures, and HR rules to quash bias. They don't just fail, they reduce workforce diversity by alienating managers. Training programs begin by trying to convince people that they are biased, and then list everything they've probably been doing that is against the law. Harassment training shows employees that they can't even recognize harassment and spells out what the law supposedly prohibits. Our interviews show that this approach makes white men feel guilty and defensive, which is a poor strategy for winning people over. And our statistical analysis shows that it leads to decreases in women and people of color in management. Management training can be tweaked to avoid the blame game and invite managers to be part of the solution to career bottlenecks or part of changing a culture of harassment. Then it doesn't backfire, but few employers have done that. Grievance procedures pose a similar problem. They focus blame on individuals rather than on systems. It is true that individuals may harass or discriminate, but these solutions lead to defensiveness and retaliation against people who file complaints, which often leads those people to quit. Then, the ultimate irony, word gets out that the grievance system backfires on those who complain, so no one complains anymore, and the top brass concludes that no complaints equals no problems and becomes complacent. So when companies put discrimination and harassment grievance procedures in place, they see big losses of women and people of color in management. Two alternatives work much better: ombuds offices and dispute resolution offices. Neither produces retaliation, and both are more likely to resolve problems than to exacerbate them. We show how they work in the book. These were five insights from our book, Getting to Diversity: What Works and What Doesn't. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Frank and Alexandra. That was Frank Dobbin and Alexandra Kalev with five big ideas from Getting to Diversity: What Works and What Doesn't. You might also want to check out our book bite for Beyond D&I, Leading Diversity with Purpose and Inclusiveness by Kay Formanek. I'm Rufus Griscom. Thanks for listening.